This is the What Matters Most podcast. A 100% listener-supported program. And now, here is your host, Paul Samuel Dolman.
Welcome back to What Matters Most, my beautiful audience around the world. Happy days to you. Appreciate all the guest suggestions and also the affirmations, the questions, the dialogues. What an honor to sit in this seat. Special thanks to my Patreons who support our show so I get to sit here and talk to the most interesting people around the world. And today is no exception. Also, a special thanks to my dear friend Deborah Silverman who put me together with this guest, and she has been an inspiration to me for years. I came across her like millions of people in her TED Talk, My Stroke of Insight. It was a life-changing experience, and then I read the book. She has a new book out that's really deep and wonderful. I went right through it. I learned a lot. It's called Whole Brain Living. What an honor to finally welcome to the family the incredible, the brilliant Jill Bolte Taylor. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, happy to be with you, Paul. Thank you so much.
Before we dive into the book and so many other things, I've been asking all my guests, since we're having an interesting year, how did you do particularly with COVID? Did it affect you much? Did it affect your thinking? Did you lose anyone?
I started watching it early on because I'm a biological mind as a neuroanatomist. So I have expected something like this to happen because it's the natural unfolding of humanity for us to get this kind of thing in order to control our population a bit. So when I first started thinking about it in early January, it crossed my world. And so I started watching it very closely, and I really started contacting people and said, you know, this is going to be big. Pay attention, get food, be prepared in order to try to protect yourself, get some supplies. So I was an early person. And I live on a boat half a year, and I thought, okay, so that's going to be my safe place because I'm kind of out in the middle of nowhere on my own, so I would be able to control my environment. But I had major concern for what is going to happen economically, what's going to happen with the level of violence in our society. And, you know, I was on alarm early, but a controlled alarm. And then I spent the rest of the year finishing this book. So I used it wisely and watched it closely.
I have been thinking these have to come down the pike. And Jill, you're a scientist. Is this nature's way, Gaia's way of culling the herd or maybe eliminating enough of the virus so it's not a threat to the whole?
Well, you know, human is the only animal that it overpopulates its space. And we have such interesting politics all around the world where in some places genocide is acceptable and abortion is not acceptable in other areas. I mean, we're just really all over the map when it comes to humanity and how we view our own population. We have not wrapped our minds and hearts around it in a positive and healthy way. So, yes, the planet's going to rebel. I think that energetics is also a big player. And I think that the negative energetic and hostility of me, my is a vibration. And I think it just set up for a beautiful spread of that virus, which energetically responded to what we've been doing as humanity.
I totally agree. And we're not out of the woods yet, just because we're tired of sitting around in a pandemic and we can't be still. I see everybody rushing back to bars, restaurants, airports, and travel, but I don't think this thing's gone. Wishing it away won't make it happen.
Well, you know, we've been that way since, April? You know, I mean, it's really been a fascinating exploration and discovery of what is humanity at this junction, because none of us would have expected the scientists to become the bad guys, the science to be disrespected and disregarded. And but this is who we are. And, you know, Paul, when you think about 20-25 years ago, when it became politically incorrect to have opposing views, the opposing views didn't go away. They just got silenced into their own underground. And then we created an environment where, again, that underground was given a voice. And then it has erupted as a powerful voice. So this is who we are. This is the best of humanity, and this is the worst of humanity. But ultimately, it's all inside of this human brain. And I think that understanding the human brain helps us understand who are the factions, what is going on, and what do we need to do if we're truly going to evolve.
God, what a great take. And if you were talking to a highly evolved species or group from another galaxy, and they said, Dr. Taylor, we also saw your TED Talk. We've been following you. We have some controls here. Is humanity actually good for your planet? Would the planet be better off without this one organism that's so highly destructive and does not live in harmony with all the other organisms?
Well, Paul, it's beyond living in harmony with the planet and other organisms. We don't live in harmony with ourselves. So I think then we have to ask ourselves the question, is humanity, a part of humanity is very healthy. A part of humanity understands that we have a symbiotic relationship with all life and this, the life of the planet. Some of us get that, and some of us just don't have any understanding whatsoever what that even means. They find it irritating and terrifying because they don't even understand, you know, it becomes the enemy against the me. And so, yes, I would say part of us is very cancerous. It's kind of like a human body. Many of the cells, even when it is at its most contaminated or infested or whatever, a lot of the cells are still healthy. And so how do we bring health to the healthy part of humanity? And how do we then I don't want to say kill off, but. And I don't want to say minimize, but heal. I'm going to use the word heal. How do we heal the cells in the body that are not well? And, you know, the pandemic is going to take out a lot of the population. So which part of the population is most likely to be taken out is going to be the population that doesn't take it seriously. So this may be one of nature's way, natural ways of healing humanity in its, you know, macrocosm, microcosm way of being.
Before we get into the book next, when I saw your TED Talk, I was amazed, but one of the first thoughts I had afterwards, after I dried the old tears, I thought, how in heaven's name will that woman ever be able to reintegrate into linear life after having such a soul explosion? And I'm sure as it's still ongoing, I know you sound wonderful, but it was almost like you got literally, like you said, in it, you were so big. And now what I'm asking is, as a genie who was out of the bottle, what's it like now to be back in the bottle? Are you okay?
Yes, I'm really, really well. And thank you for asking. You know, it's I made an agreement with myself when I lost my left hemisphere, which is my linear rational thinking, that I would recover enough of those skills to at least appear to my fellow man to be normal enough to communicate a message that we are in that beautiful right hemisphere, as big as the universe. There is no separation from the atoms and molecules that make up me and the atoms and molecules that make up everything. And if we wipe out a small group of cells in that left parietal region, then that those the job of those cells is to define the boundaries of where I begin and where I end. And so when you think about your face and you touch your face, you know that your face is your face because there's a holographic image defined by that group of cells in your left hemisphere that is me. That is the I. I am separate. I am an individual. And without those cells, I don't know that the glasses that are on my face are not me, because I have to have those cells in order to define that boundary. So imagine what it's like when you don't have those cells and you shift into this high, this shift in larger expansive consciousness, where I am the energy that is moving the tree leaves as they move in response to the wind. I'm not the leaf. I am the leaf, but I'm not the leaf. I am actually the energy that is moving that leaf. And that's another alternative way that our brain is designed to have perception. So, you know, just coming back and having these two awarenesses, a clear awareness of what is the right hemisphere, how does it experience what am I as a living being in relationship to the left hemisphere that then defines what I am as an individual separate from the whole. So, you know, I my agreement with myself was to try to recover the skill sets, but to never allow the character profiles of that left brain and what it values, what they value, to rule my life. And that has been a successful reintegration.
Well, there's a happy ending, because sometimes when you do see the wizard behind the curtain, one could go fetal and give up, or just go look for the highest building.
Sadly, that is true.
It's like, I'm leaving Barbaria and all its, you know, I'm quitting the game. I'm taking my ball and leaving my body behind.
Exactly. But, you know, I think it was the ultimate in a hero's journey. And I think life is a hero's journey for every one of us, whatever our circumstance. And the ultimate goal of the hero's journey is to, first of all, hear a calling, feel a calling, and then heed that there's something I want to explore that is bigger than I am, greater than I am, kind of the sea from which this drop that I define as me comes from. But part of that then is I have to battle then my monsters. And my monsters are the emotions of my past and my fear of the future. And eventually I put my sword down and say, what will be. And then I step into the consciousness of the right hemisphere, which is where I have left the me, the individual, the small self behind. And I step into this consciousness of knowing that I am a part of it all. And I am a part of this beautiful sea, and I feel that, and I feel the love, because there's this underlying, overall reaching, deep, unconditional feeling of love. And as I meld into that love, and I feel not just nurtured and supported, but I feel whole, I feel authentic, I feel like I have come home after a long journey. And then and that's the ultimate, you know, reach for the hero. But then the hero has to decide, well, what do I do with this beauty? What do I do with this love? What do I do with this peace? What do I do with this wisdom and this intuition and this knowingness? What do I do with it? Do I stay here and you know, want to return to it eternally, which I think is where we all go at the end of life and we come from at the beginning of life? Or am I willing to step back into and endure the pain and the agony of recovery in order to re-enter into this humanity and this domination of our left brain that says, I, the individual, am all that is important and all important, and I must have power and I must use force? And then what do I do with it? Do I just come back, or do I share the story of what of my journey? And that's the ultimate goal, I think, of the hero's journey of life, is to constantly re-step into and bring back what I have gained, stepping to the side of the fear of me, the individual.
Somewhere Joseph Campbell is smiling as I'm looking up at the shelf, and I see a hero of 1,000 faces up there amongst the books.
Exactly.
That was beautiful. Man, very mythological. I said that at the time when I saw your journey. I thought if she's made it back down, I could tell because she's teaching it rather than I dwell in that space a lot. I luckily didn't have to get there through a stroke or anything like that or pharmaceuticals. I just have found it through meditation and practice and silencing the mind. But yet, you know, like the seasons or the weather, we just had a nor'easter up here. It comes and goes, Jill. I'll wake up or I'll suddenly find myself in it. And in that space, I'll never have another worry, care, or problem again. It's all perfect, even Donald Trump. And then suddenly it's gone again. And I'm hungry or annoyed at something trivial. Or I wake up the next day and in an instant, I know that the denser me is back. And it's like, ah, but I wouldn't know one without the other. So I've come to live in, accept, and fully embrace polarity for the 52 seconds that I happen to be here passing through the galaxy as this little story.
Exactly. And I love that you said, I wouldn't know one without the other. We have to have the other in order to be able to have any reflection or any analysis whatsoever. We have to have two. We can't just be a thing. We can't be the light and know we are light without the darkness. We have to have the other. And so that's from me, from my perspective, when I lost the left hemisphere and I lost the character profiles in the left hemisphere, I was given this incredible opportunity to experience an unadulterated, unbiased, untethered right hemisphere experience of total silence for 5 full weeks. And it was amazing. But, you know, I'm blissful euphoria. What good is that if I'm alive, right? I'm going to be blissful euphoria when I die for eternity. Why not use this opportunity to try to communicate to my other, which in human form is this left hemisphere, to help the left hemisphere characters recognize that we are a combination of a this and a that. And the ultimate goal is balance between the two, because then we have clarity, then we have peace, then we have understanding, and then we have evolved. And, you know, the ultimate goal of any species is its own natural evolution.
Amen. Do you feel your soul orchestrated all this in conjunction and cooperation and in partnership with divine intelligence and did it through this little personality that we call Jill and has a story, that it wasn't an accident or some strange coincidence, that this was divinely inspired, even though your personality, I guess, has free choice where you could have given up or you could have done what you're doing?
Yes, I could have chosen to remain vegetative. You know, the hero could have stayed in that blissful euphoria until my body died. That was a choice. It was effort for 8 full years of being willing to try to really overcome an agony of recovery. It was agony to choose to try. It's like learning math when you don't even know what a one is. I mean, where does one go with that? So I don't have an opinion about, was this a, you know, divine agreement? Because my experience of being as disconnected as I was, which was about as dead could be without being dead, I was still tethered to my life. And in the absence of knowing what happens beyond my life, I didn't go there. I didn't have the near death light. I didn't have the conversations. I just lost half my brain and got all but disconnected and sat at the end of that link where I felt absolutely enormous, as big as the universe, and thought, well, you know, what do I do with this? And so I don't have an opinion beyond what life is. I can just take you out to the utmost edge of what life is and have an opinion about that.
I would assume, though, in the darkest moments of the 8-year struggle, you had to consider giving up, right? I mean, just you're human and you needed, again, back to polarity.
Actually, I never did. For me, for me, there was this tiny, well, in the beginning, when I first woke up and I was all but dead, I thought, what do I do with this? I mean, that was when I let go, when I went unconscious, you know, up to that point, it was hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Well, what are you holding on to? Well, I have no idea. Life, you know, but how do you hold on to life? You get quiet, you get still, you slow your blood pressure down as much as possible so that you don't pump out more blood for the hemorrhage to kill you. So there was a knowingness for me of go quiet, go quiet, go still. But I held on, held on, held on to that life until I was in an ambulance rushing across Boston to Mass General Hospital, and literally on the doorsteps of the emergency room, that's when I felt what I would describe as my spirit surrendered, and I released, and there I let go. So when I woke up later that afternoon and discovered I was still alive, I literally was shocked because I let go. And yet I was tethered to this body now in a way that where it was like a genie being wrapped around this tiny little body thinking, oh Lord, you know, wow, you know, what do I do with this? Cause I'm neither there nor here. Where am I? I mean, I'm in this big vacuum in between and I'm neither. And yet there was a part of my spirit that was just elated that I'm alive. I survived. And it was that tiny impetus of energy that would ultimately drive the recovery back to, you know, because there was no guarantee I'd get anything back. And there nobody anticipated I'd get everything back because the trauma was just too massive. And here I am. So, you know, it is what it is. It was a fantastic journey. It's my journey. I'm glad I took it. And, you know, I've had 22 years of gravy time, but I never felt bad for myself because I'm alive. I didn't die that day. And, you know, how can I not celebrate the fact that I'm alive, even if I'm in a vegetative condition, if I don't have the cells in my left brain saying, oh, woe is me, this is a bummer. I lost all that and I gained the present moment. And the present moment is, oh my God, I'm alive. Wow. I'm alive. I can see with eyes. I can hear sound. I'm alive, you know? So for me, no, there was never the woe is me.
I'm in awe of the strength. Where does all this strength come from? Have you ever considered that, or are you just too busy being in the moment?
Oh, well, the strength is, you know, I am not an individual. I mean, there's a tiny group of cells in my brain that define me as this tiny little body and this tiny little person, but that's not what I am. That's not what any of us is. You wipe out those cells and you're the power of the universe. We are the life force power with manual dexterity and two cognitive minds. And we have the power to choose moment by moment who and how we want to be in the world. So the power comes from the universe. You know, I don't know if there was some agreement. I'm sure a lot of people think that there was an agreement. I'm not that girl. I didn't have that awareness. All I knew was I still had life. And I truly believed that if humanity understood how powerful and how peaceful and how beautiful we are in the absence of that left brain, then we would become a more compassionate and loving people. We would become what we are. We would evolve into what I believe we are based on this experience.
And is that the genesis and the origin story of this beautiful new book?
So the beautiful new book came in after I gave that TED Talk where I said, we have the power to choose moment by moment who and how we want to be in the world. I had over 300,000 people write to me and say, well, Jill, you had to have a stroke to get that. How do I get that? And I thought about it and I thought about it and I thought about it and I was stumped because I didn't know. I went from the right, I got whacked out of my left brain into nothing but a clean, clear right brain. And then I used my right brain to rebuild the skill sets and character profiles of my left brain, but I didn't know how to tell your left brain characters how to quiet themselves enough to find what I gained in the stroke of just that pure right brain. So I struggled with that for until 2015. And in 2015, my father died at the age of 96. I was okay with that. He lived a great life and he was good to go. But I lost my mother unexpectedly at the end of 2015 after an unexpected 5 month bout with cancer. And I was devastated because my mother was my best friend. She reared me twice. She was a magnificent human being. She was my mom. So that was hard for me. And then in 2016, I really had a chance to rebuild my identity. Who is Jill now without mom and dad? Because I was a part of this trio to take care of my brother who is diagnosed with schizophrenia. So my whole life had been a part of this family unit. And then it was like, okay, well, Jill, now you're on your own. Who is Jill? And based on your own personal journey, who is Jill? No longer of service to mom and dad. So I bought a boat and I moved to my childhood happy place, which was a lake where my family had gone when I was a little girl. And we would spend a month every summer water skiing and camping. And I thought, that's where I want to be. That's where little Jill wants to go and heal. And so I would leave the boat periodically to keynote at conferences. And I was keynoting and I said to an audience, you know, I absolutely love talking about the brain to the public right now because the public loves the brain and they know about the amygdala and the hippocampi and you know, the limbic system. But the fact of the matter is we have two amygdala. And there was literally an audible gasp in the room when people thought, really? There's two? Because everybody knows we have an amygdala, which is, you know, fight or flight and alarm, alarm, alert, alert. And then the hippocampi turn on and we can learn and memorize. But they didn't realize that we had two amygdala and two hippocampi. And so that was the cue to me that gave me the information I needed. If people think we only have one emotional system, then emotional conflict doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Because again, as we said earlier, you have to have the other in order to have true reflection and analysis of the relationship between the two. And so once I realized that people did not realize that we have two emotional systems evenly divided between the right hemisphere, which is right here, right now, and the left hemisphere, which is our emotional system of the past and the future, all of a sudden that begins to make some sense to people. So then I realized people didn't realize we have two emotional modules of cells and we have two separate thinking modules of cells. And each of those four modules of cells don't just exhibit specific skill sets that are unique to each of them, but they have value structures and they actually have characters and personalities. So that's how whole brain living, the anatomy of choice, and the four characters that drive our life came to be in existence.
I just want to keep hearing more and more about the brain. I am so in awe of it. And the book even made me more in awe of it. Aren't you blown away the more you dive in? It's so incredible. And I know this is your realm, but it's supernatural to me, even though it's obviously very practical too.
You know, I will never be bored with thinking about the brain. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I chose to go into it was I knew I would never be bored. And I certainly never anticipated that I would have this wild experience with stroke, any of this. I of course, had no perception of this journey, but it's my journey. And I truly believe, Paul, that this book, Whole Brain Living, is the reason why I had the stroke. I recovered from that stroke, and this is the message I'm supposed to communicate. Because it's not just a message, it's an understanding of who are we? Who are the we inside of each one of us? There are four distinct characters anatomically based inside of each of our brains. And this is the first paradigm, which makes no sense to me at all, that this is the first paradigm that truly marries psychology of character with the anatomy of the brain. So we have, you know, we have neurology and neuroscience and neuroanatomy and all this hard science. And then we have all this psychology. And finally, we're sticking it together in this paradigm of understanding. We have two emotional systems. They process incoming information in different ways. They're going to think about things differently. They're going to have different values, and they're going to be different parts of who we feel and exhibit in our daily life. And then we also have these two thinking modules of cells that are very different from one another. So why not get to know, what are the character profiles of each of these four modules of cells, these four characters? And all of a sudden, oh my gosh, that makes sense, because yeah, I see all four of those, not just in me, but in everybody I know. And then how do I take this information and evolve it to a coordinated effort on my behalf as a human being? Because ultimately, isn't that the evolution of who I am, one brain at a time? And when we each have that level of evolution, oh my gosh, we suddenly, everything makes more sense. And we have the power then to choose who and how we want to be in the world.
Well, you're tapping into my brain right now because you're answering questions I'm thinking. So that's pretty cool. Our mind streams are blending up in some iCloud.
Exactly. Okay. So can we talk about the four characters? You ready?
Well, you just read my mind. I was going to ask you, will you elaborate on the four characters and how we may practically apply those?
So first of all, you know, many of us function in the myth that we only use 10% of our brain. And that's simply not true. Neurons are social creatures. They thrive in network. And when they're not stimulating or stimulated by others, they literally curl up into little balls and they tend to die. So if it's alive and it's in your head, you're using it. The other myth is that the right hemisphere is our emotional brain and our left hemisphere is our rational thinking brain. And that's not true either. Emotion is evenly divided into both hemispheres, and thinking tissue is evenly divided into both hemispheres. Now, it is true that the left thinking tissue is the rational part of our character, and that is true, and that is important. When you look at these two hemispheres, the right hemisphere is right here, right now. So that's easy to remember. Right hemisphere, right here, right now. And in the right here, right now, it is energetically connected to all that is in the present moment. And there is no definition of the individual of self. You actually have to have in the left hemisphere a group of cells that defines the boundaries of where I begin and where I end, so that I, Jill Bolte Taylor, get an individualization and an identity. A part of that thinking tissue also has language. And so I have the ability to create sound. Dog. Dog is a sound. And then the left hemisphere places a meaning on that sound. And then we have language and we can communicate with one another through sound. Phenomenal. A group of cells does this. Amazing. So here I am. I have individuation, which means I have an ego. And all of a sudden, then I'm processing all the information coming in about the external world through me, the individual. And I, the individual, have emotional tissue. And that emotional tissue is looking, taking information about the present moment, comparing it to the past, projecting me into the future, and asking me, is there any reason why I should push away from this? Is this a threat that I can recognize from any past experience? Well, that's genius. How on earth did a group of cells make a decision to take present moment experience and compare it to a time that doesn't even exist? I mean, I don't know about you, but right there, Paul, I'm blown away at the sophistication of that left hemisphere. It is amazing. So I call these four characters, characters one, character two, character three, and character four. In the left hemisphere, it's going to be character one is left thinking tissue. And character one is the part of our personality that is rational in the external world. That tissue defines the boundaries of where I begin and where I end. So I am an individual. I am Jill Bolte Taylor. I have a phone number and an address, and all that information gets stored in that rational thinking tissue. That left thinking tissue, character one, defines what is right and what is wrong, what is good and what is bad. It has opinions and it needs to be right. It always wants to be correct. It wants to be the boss. It wants you to put the stapler back where the stapler belongs because it functions in an orderly, controlled environment that it creates and orders and controls. So it controls people, places, and things. So this is our A-type personality. And most all of us can recognize easily this part of ourselves. And I encourage everybody to give that identity of you a name. And because a name honors that that is a character inside of myself. Where does this character show up? For me, it goes to work. It goes to the office. It gets me places on time. It orders and controls time so I can be punctual. And it wants you to be punctual too. So I call my character one Helen. That's short for Hell on Wheels. She gets it done. She holds my body a certain way. She thinks certain kinds of thoughts. She orders and creates relationships in the external world in a rational way. So, Paul, do you recognize that part of yourself?
I do, and I'm smiling and laughing. I had to mute my mic because I didn't want to tread on you. I call them the aspects of myself. I have board meetings. No element is banished because then they wake you up in the middle of the night complaining or they get into trouble. So I give every aspect a voice, and I give them all kinds of nicknames, too. I've been doing this for years, and it works. It works wonderfully for you, the listeners. So I'm on board.
It's amazing. So it's amazing. You know, once you know who's inside of you, and you know you listen to the conversations in your head, you're going, oh, yeah, that's Helen, or oh, yeah, that's so-and-so. And it's like, okay, well, who do we want to be in this moment? You know, and we're in the constant negotiation moment by moment, and all four are vying for the microphone. They all want to be heard.
Well, and also, they are there, and each serves a great purpose. Like, there are times I need each one of them. They've evolved, and one time, some of them served me well, but I need to have the most conscious aspect of me, which I call Soul Paul, as the final operator of the control panel.
Exactly. And I'm going to call that character four, and we'll get there. But you're absolutely right.
And I have a committee I call the Quality of Life Committee. When ego guy runs something by me, or sneaky guy, or a lack and scarcity guy, I say, oh, that's a cool idea. Go run it across the Quality of Life Committee. And if that truly increases the quality of life and makes it us a better being in the world, I'm all for it. And then they go, you ruin everything, you know, and then they sulk off. But they have to be heard.
They have to be heard. And you just absolutely perfectly described your four characters. I don't know why I had to have a stroke in order to get this. You could have written the book and I could be at Harvard.
Well, and I'm allergic to pain and suffering. I think they knew all that inner strength you had. I would have just kept going that day. I was done. So they figured that it was like putting too much weight on a flimsy table. They say, pick Jill. She's much stronger. I have a cushy desk job. I work in the podcast business.
Well, yeah, pick Jill. Well, they did. Anyway, okay. Character number two. You described your character number two as your pain. What did you call him?
Pain body guy, egoic mind guy, ego guy. Ego guy is the main guy because he's ego driven. He's self-interested. He has his own PR department.
But who's your pain? Who's your emotional pain from your past?
That's Wounded Guy. Wounded Guy. And then there's, and he's been traumatized. Then there's this overlord type that's the critic who just lurks, and somehow we should be perfect. And he would have bought Amazon when it was like 88 cents. Unfortunately, he lives looking back and then critiques everything. If I could get him with Future Guy, and I was literally buying it at 88 cents, if those two could team up.
Right. Okay.
But so, that critic guy would have nothing to do because he couldn't criticize.
Exactly. Okay. So that's beautiful. That's your character two. And character two is not rational. And character two is, think about it this way. This is how I think about it anyway. When we are born... So first of all, character two characteristics are, I describe it as all the pain from our past. This is the part of our brain that is looking for a reason to push away from the present moment and say, no, I don't like it. I don't recognize it. It's not familiar. So I'm going to be mean to it. I'm going to be bigoted against it. I'm going to be racist against it. I'm going to be xenophobic against it. So these are all these negative traits. And because it doesn't feel safe, alarm, alarm, alert, alert, I don't feel safe. It's not familiar. So it ends up in a personality characteristic of all these things. It blames, it feels guilty, it resents, it shames, it attacks self, it attacks others. In other words, it's not happy. I'm not happy. Listen to me. I'm an infant. I am alarm, alarm, alert, alert. I don't feel safe. It's not familiar. So we know that part of ourselves. So I give my character number two, my pain, emotional circuitry of my past and future. I call mine Abby. And Abby stands for abandoned. And to me, the first original abandonment was the moment I was born. Because think about this. When we are conceived and we become that original cell, the zygote cell, we have half the DNA from mom and half the DNA from dad. And we are cush in this little cell. We're migrating on the fallopian promenade into the womb, or we're already in the womb. We attach ourselves, and we are in this symbiotic relationship with our mother's body for our gestation. And during that gestation, all I know is my mother's energetic of her body. Eventually, I'm a cell. I multiply my DNA, and then we repackage that. I multiply that DNA. It gets repackaged. And those cells will multiply and divide at a rate of up to 250,000 new cells per second, not per minute. Per second. So the energy ball that is controlling my gestation in relationship to the differentiation of my DNA, as my cells differentiate into different kinds of cells, making different organs, organ systems, etc., ultimately my whole fetal body, this is at a rate of 250,000 cells per second. Now, that's all symbiotic in relationship to the energetic of every cell in my body and the relationship with my mother's body. Then, bam, birth happens, right? As soon as birth happens, I gasp, my lungs expand, I get air and gas into my lungs. Light is no longer muted. Sound is no longer muted. If this is not a moment of trauma, to me, this is the original trauma that we all experience. And it's from the symbiosis of mother to our individuation. And it is a group of cells in that left emotional tissue that bring information in about the present moment, and they steps out of the peaceful, blissful euphoria of the present moment, which the right hemisphere stays in. So the character three emotional tissue of that right hemisphere is going to stay in symbiosis with the present moment consciousness. But the left hemisphere, these are the superhero cells that said, I will step out of the peaceful euphoria of the present, blissful euphoria of the present moment, and I will step out of that and compare stimulation coming in to anything we've experienced in the past. And the past, at a fundamental level, is the root of trauma. So for me, that is a beautiful masterpiece of cells that is willing to step out of the present moment and explore, give me a reason to say no, because now my left hemisphere, these cells are going to define myself as an ego and an individual, where I can suffer death, I can suffer pain, I can suffer detachment, I can suffer. So this is I have the ability to suffer. I don't feel safe. You don't look familiar. I'm going to push it away. I'm going to rage. I'm going to rant and rave. I'm going to, in response to my alarm, alarm, alert, alert, I don't feel safe. So that is our character too.
I'm in awe. And all I keep thinking throughout all of this is that clarity about this and consciousness about this can only help us operate in the world. Because it's like having this super duper incredible computer, but if you don't know what it does, imagine using an iMac as a hammer, you know, just because you didn't know any better.
And what a good hammer it would make, because it's like, what's this thing made out of, titanium?
That's right. It's a shitty hammer. You don't know how to use it. Don't use the hammer for the, what are you doing?
Exactly. Wow. I mean, that's just, now most of us, you know, this is the part of us that goes to therapy, right? This is the part of us that our partners look dangerous because they don't understand every ounce of my pain. And this part of us is looping in our pain, our emotional pain, our emotional trauma, our physical pain, our suffering on every level. There's a group of cells in there of the insular cortex of the brain of that left hemisphere, which is our craving tissue. So we crave tobacco, we crave alcohol, we crave a drug, we crave to be loved, we crave to be something other than what we are. And so that is also our addiction tissue. And so if we're going to go through any mode of rehabilitation, we have to have this character on board for that rehabilitation, or we will jump through the hoops of rehabilitation, but it will not have gotten to the core of the problem, and we will probably relapse. So this tissue, this portion of ourselves, we, our other three characters, need to learn how do we self-soothe this part of ourselves so that this part of ourselves doesn't grab that microphone and run our lives into our pain. I always tell people, pain, it is important. I don't mind if you are miserable as long as you remember to enjoy it. You must enjoy, celebrate the fact that we can be so raw, so filled with grief, so filled with anger, so filled with sadness, so filled with all of these emotions, but that is cellular circuitry. We are to visit that place. We are not to make that place a lifestyle.
You know what? As I was reading the book and I'm hearing you today, a question arises. Jill, if someone was looking to find their purpose, where would they look in all of this, and how would they use the elements? Because I get so many questions about this, and so many people I run across today are searching for their purpose. You found it, obviously. I have on some days, good days. What can construct, what part of the brain, what elements can you bring together that will help find what will resonate for them and give them the kind of meaning that you've discovered?
Perfect. Let's move on to the right brain. So character one, left thinking, rational, organizes the external world. Character two, our pain, our deep, deep pain. And our pain, it is important for us to have our pain because it is important for us to figure out, how do I get out of my own pain? How do I get out of my own way? my own, how do I self-soothe? That is success as far as, you know, how do we create a healthy humanity? Because if you're in your pain, Paul, how can I help you out of your pain when your pain is your pain? And really only you have the capacity to truly soothe that part of yourself. So let's go now. And let's note that when I lost my left hemisphere, I lost both of those characters. Now, the blessing, of course, was that I lost all my pain from my past. Character two died that day, but also I, at the cost of my character one, which was my individuality, my ego, my thinking, rational brain, my individuation, all of me, my language, the boundaries of where I began and end. So I lost the emotion and the pain, but I also lost the rational part of myself that dealt like a functional human being in the world. So that's what's going on in the left hemisphere. When those two characters went offline and they dropped their inhibition over my right hemisphere characters, character three is the emotion of the present moment. And the emotion of the present moment is a right here, right now experiential. I no longer have the individuality of me, the individual. That's gone with my left hemisphere. I don't have language anymore. That's fine, because now I'm pretty much a consciousness of all that is. Without the boundaries of where I begin, I become the consciousness of the present moment, the energy of the present moment, which exists in every cell inside of my body. Yet this is still an emotional tissue. It's limbic emotional tissue, but emotion of the present moment is pretty much an adrenaline rush. It's also an alarm, alarm, alert, alert. Am I safe? Am I dangerous? Am I, what am I? I'm a bullion. I'm, what am I doing? I want to jump out of an airplane because yeah, that sounds like fun. I feel the level of humidity in the air of the present moment. I feel the texture of the clothing that I'm wearing on my body. I'm feeling whether or not I picked comfy shoes to put on today. The experience of the present moment. What does it feel like to swim in water and feel the pressure against my body, the air temperature? That's the experiential. Character three is the experiential, and it is empathic because it shares consciousness with those around me. So I'm not the individual. There is pain. I become a part of that pain. I have those mirror neurons that allow me to experience what is being experienced by those around me. And it's playful. And it's creative. And it's creative because the left brain judgment of what is right and what is wrong and what is good and what is bad, that all goes offline. So there's no one saying, Jill, you have to cover color inside of the lines. And the tree leaves need to be green. They can't be purple. You know, there is none of that right, wrong, good, bad. There's just the experience of the present moment. And so this is a playful, creative, innovative, interested, empathic, loving part of ourselves that in the freedom, in that freedom of no left brain to make those judgments, it is what it is. So do you know that part of yourself, Paul?
You took me out of my meditative state. I was dwelling there. Now I have a linear question. I love when you said it's playful, because I have found the universe, which dwells through me in that spot, and obviously through all of me, is got an incredible sense of humor. It's joyful. It's mischievous. It's funny.
Exactly. I mean, wit is in that character.
So witty. It's devious. It's clever.
Yeah, it is. It's devious and it's clever and it's it can get us into big trouble.
Only because it doesn't pay any consequences. It's universal light and love.
And on top of that, it doesn't obey the artificial structure and definition of right, wrong, good, bad that the authoritative left hemisphere dictates.
Because it's all one. It sees it all as a game. And it's a great place to be. But then the linear body, the mammal, the trillion cell organism than my being, you know, incarcerated for things the universal self was playfully doing.
So that's character three. I call my character three Pigpen. And Pigpen, you remember the Charles Schulz character, like Snoopy and Peanuts, and of Peanuts and Snoopy and Lucy and Charlie Brown. There's a character called Pigpen. And Pigpen is always walking around in a dust storm. And Pigpen's pretty happy. And Pigpen is just present. And Pigpen's everywhere, but never really contributing much other than the presence of. Pigpen is so I call my character three Pigpen. Because Pigpen, the first step of the creative process is chaos. And Pigpen exists in that chaos. So I call mine Pigpen.
Do you remember he had a great line in one of those? I think it was the Christmas special where he said, "I don't see it as dirt. I see it as the remnants of ancient civilizations. And this could be part of Egypt and the pyramids, or Alexander the Great, or the library at Babylon." And they all looked at him. They were stumped because he was right.
I love it. That's right. There's no time. There's no time. There's no limits. Where it's all one big blend.
Although I want to be as happy as Snoopy was.
Yes. Joy, 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 joy.
All right. Go to number four, right?
Yeah. So character number four is the thinking tissue of the right hemisphere. And when you stop and you consider what was the consciousness of the universe that ended up fueling all of that cellular multiplication during development inside of the womb, that consciousness, we stay in relationship with that right thinking tissue. And that right thinking tissue is essentially remains in the present moment. It is void of the emotion. It is simply in the purity of the love that is the energetic field of our life. So when we meditate to find that character for peaceful, blissful euphoria, big as the universe. When we pray to a God, which is also that consciousness through the universe. So when you look at the structure of the religions that the left brain uses, the process of prayer, the process of mantra, in order to find something that is greater than us, it is using the tools of the left hemisphere skill set in order to find the right hemisphere blissful euphoria and the consciousness of all that is. So we are wired at the level of our consciousness of our right thinking character four, which is as big as the universe. And that's why we can't escape it. It is a part of what we are, and that consciousness exists in every cell of our body. So, Paul, I call my character four Queen Toad. I call her Queen because she is as big as the universe, at one with all that is. And I call her Toad because she is a bit goofy, but she loves the water. She lives on the water, and this boat is my lily pad. So Queen Toad exists in nature, at one with all that is, in the beautiful realm of that character four.
Is it hard to have the queen come in and dock, or come down out of the forest, or from the mountain, bringing the tablets? Or do you flow and function easily between the four spheres? Because speaking personally, when I'm in nature now, I'm looking out the window, the trees are swaying, the birds are on the feeder, the squirrels hogging the seeds. I'm on an island in New England in Martha's Vineyard. I find my home here, and I have to kind of drag this guy down and out, wash him off and bring him down the mountain and integrate him a bit. But that might be more me. I joked when we came on that I was getting a little feral. How are you doing? I just feel like this is the natural state.
Yes. For me, also, it is the natural state. I will be out here at least 4 or 5 months before I go back into a civilization. But, you know, as a public speaker, I go from being feral in nature, if you will, to enormous numbers of people and energy. And so my agreement with myself is the next step that we're going to talk about, which is the brain huddle. And the brain huddle is, how do I bring these four characters together in conversation and have each of them have their needs met? And ultimately, I know that in that huddle, and I call it a huddle because these four characters make up my brain's team, and teams get together and huddle to determine the next best play for, you know, the game. And so this is the game of life. So my brain team gets together in a brain huddle, and as soon as my character four is involved in the huddle, I know that I will make a decision. We will make a collective decision based on what is best for all four of us. And it is a unanimous decision. So when I go into the world, I go wholeheartedly. And when I come back, I come back wholeheartedly. So that's the only way. Otherwise, character two is going to feel resentment. Character three is going to say, I don't want to go do that. I want to go do this instead. I want to play. And character one is saying, okay, well, you know, somebody's got to keep track of some details. What are we doing? And we got to have some order. So for me, it is the BRAIN, B-R-A-I-N, as the acronym, the BRAIN huddle. So the huddle is of these four magnificent characters. And B, breath. Bring your mind to the present moment, because a huddle is going to happen in the right here, right now. So B, focus on your breath. Bring your mind to the present moment. And invite all four of the characters into the huddle. And any four of the characters can initiate a huddle. So if character one, Helen, needs to get some work done, she can call the huddle and say, everybody, I need you online. We need to talk. Character two, if I'm unhappy and I'm raging or I'm something's, she can call a huddle. The others can call the huddle and invite little Abby into the huddle. Character three can be out playing and say, I'm going to take a huddle right now. Everybody, let's come together and talk about what fun we're having. And character four, when I'm out in nature and I'm feeling big as the universe and I have to make a real decision about, am I going to accept an invitation or not? She can call the huddle so that we all come online. But you begin it with B, stands for breath. Bring your mind to the present moment and invite everybody in. R stands for recognize which character invited, which character was I being when I invited everybody into the huddle. A stands for appreciate the fact that there are four of us. One of us may be have the power right now to pull everybody together, but there are four of us. Appreciate that there are four of us and we are all invited equally. A, I stands for inquire. Which of us is it appropriate to step into the leadership position? Who's going to come out of the huddle as having the microphone? And then N is navigate moment by moment by moment, because moments are experiential. And I might find that I decided to Helen to come out and navigate, but actually, instead of having to fix a problem, the appropriate response may be a witty one. And so it might actually be more appropriate for Pigpen character three to step in. So that's the communication of the B, breath, bring your mind to the present moment. R, recognize which character called the huddle. A, appreciate that all four of us have equal voice in here. I, inquire which one do I want to bring out next. And N, navigate character, moment by moment by moment. And that to me is pure power in the world. That's the evolution of a human brain.
As you were saying all of this, you know, it's really cool. I thought your outward life sort of mirrors you at a different rate of speed because the brain is so fast. You're moving between quadrants. You're out on the water. Maybe that's the right brain and you live and you're one with the sky. But then you integrate and you're a speaker, so you come into the left corner. You know what I mean? You're moving literally, physically, is an outward expression of what goes on in the integration between your inward brain. It's beautiful.
Yes, we are. The life that we project into the world is the macrocosm of what's going on at the cellular level as the microcosm. And if ultimate evolution of the human brain is an integration, and of course it is, it's an integration at a cellular level of who we are on the inside. And then when they're actually communicating and we have some differentiation of who's who inside of us, you know, I mean, we all know that we have these multiple different characters, but that's very different from both schizophrenia and multiple personality disorder. This is the normal anatomy of our brain and the normal integration of and the evolution of what we will be as humanity. And I truly believe that the more integrated we all become, the more clear we become on who we want to be, and we stop running with reactivity, automatic circuits that get us into trouble.
I know we have to let you go because their tides change and you need to catch the right tide. Jill, in closing, yeah, I'm looking at the tide chart right now. In closing, around the world, so many people are struggling. It's hard to be human. They're not at a place yet where it's integrated. What inspiring message would you want to leave with them just so maybe that they have a little life preserver to hang on to today to get through today? And, of course, if you're listening, we have links on this episode page to Jill's homepage, and you can get the book. So if you want to dive into this work, I highly suggest the book. You can. But Jill, what words of inspiration would you pass on to these beautiful people who've joined us?
We have so much more power over what's going on inside of our heads than we have ever been taught. And we do have these different groups of cells, and we have the choice to choose into our pain of our past, or to choose into our sense of gratitude that we exist at all and that we have this awe-inspiring life. We always have the power, and nobody can take that away from us. That is ours.
And like you beautifully said at the beginning of your book, peace is truly only a thought away.
It really is. And yeah. I mean, it's, I look forward to how your listeners will play with this material inside of their own heads. And whole brain living, the anatomy of choice, and the four characters that drive our life. It's a beautiful way to have a relationship with yourself and to lovingly then bring yourself in relationship with those around you.
You've been listening to the What Matters Most podcast, a 100% listener-supported program. If you feel inspired, please go to our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/whatmattersmost and join our family. So until the next time, stay inspired and in the light.